Welcome to Sidetracked, your unofficial agency of record. I'm Emily.
And I'm Shane, and we help run Trek, a tech-driven creative services agency based in Rockford, Illinois. Trek is a full-service marketing agency, which means we do it all, and we've been around since 1995, which means we've seen it all.
In season one of Sidetracked, we'll cover everything from AI and digital advertising to branding best practices and how to stand out with print marketing.
We believe that problems are identified by the curious and solved by the courageous.
Which is why we always start with a question. Okay, so today our big question is, why are my email open rates going down and what should I do about it? And to help answer this question, we have Jillian Hazy, our HubSpot admin and expert, to help us answer, how can we fix our email?
Hello, thanks for having me.
So I have a question for both of you, and I think each person deals with their email a little differently. So let's pretend you've come in for the morning. Your inbox has 50 unread emails in it. What do you do with those emails?
Oh my gosh, 50 emails.
Okay, maybe that's the account manager.
I operate on inbox zero. So if an email does not have a clear action item, I am immediately archiving it. I don't delete, I archive in case I need it. But I'm aggressive about archiving emails and whittling down the inbox to only the emails that I need to take action on. I'm also notorious for replying to an email and clarifying what my action item is if people send me vague emails. And I think I've sufficiently scared Trekkies to the point that I don't really receive any email from our coworkers anymore.
So you open them. You open each of the 50 emails?
No, absolutely not. I archive based on subject line and sender and preview text. And actually, this is getting into what we're going to be talking about, which is decreasing open rates. But something that I think is really going on out there is that it's not that people aren't taking the information they need from an email. I think a lot of people do evaluate based on the subject line and the preview text whether they need what's in that email. And maybe they did need the information, but they got it from the subject line. I think there's a lot of zero-click opens happening out there. There are emails that I subscribe to that I want to get, but I might only open, you know, 10%. Of the emails from that sender. And I appreciate the ones I get. I appreciate the ones that I get helpful information from the subject line, even if I never open it. but no, I'm only opening emails where I have to open it and figure out what my action item is so that I can then archive it and get it out of my inbox.
Interesting. We're similar and not. Jillian, I'm curious what your process is.
I operate very much in the same way as Shane. I hate having like any number above zero showing in my inbox as unreads. It just really, it's like the OCD in me. I just have to clear them out. So I go through very much of the same process, like take a look at the subject line, the sender. If I can immediately see that it's just like a marketing or a sales type email or kind of like a no response sender, then I absolutely just close that out. So I bulk select, quite honestly, all of those and push them over to archive. Everything else that is either, you know, specifically from a client or an account manager forwarded to me or someone outside of the organization where it's a direct reach out to me, then I will open those and then determine at that case or at that time rather. If they need a response or not. But I very much do the full swoop.
I hate to admit this, but I didn't know that you could archive emails. So I delete a lot. I probably should not admit that. But also, my process is a little bit different because I don't archive. I sort into labels. We use Gmail, we use the G Suite. So I sort into different client labels or task-based or whatever it might be. But I also have this policy mentally where if I have deleted an email and I start to get annoyed, either stupid subject lines or they're emailing me way too much, or they're just not delivering the value that I thought that they would. They have like probably 4 to 5 emails and then I'm unsubscribing. So because I get inundated with so many emails, part of that process for me is I will delete it if immediately I'm like, I know I don't want to read this. I will leave it on read if I need to go back to it, if I think it's going to take some mental time to sort through. And that's like my to-do list. Leave it unread. If it's unread, I have to do something with it. Or if I think it's done, I'll open it and then like move it into the folder. But if it's somebody that I'm like, I know I do not want to hear from Costco about the fridges that they have on sale this week anymore. Like I need to unsubscribe. I will open it, unsubscribe it. And it's a pain in the butt to do, but that extra like 5 seconds gives me clarity in my inbox moving forward. And that's a new thing for me, because I used to just like kind of grin and bear it. But I think in the last like year or so, my email tolerance has gone way down. Like I just don't tolerate spam anymore.
So I also aggressively unsubscribe, but I do, I guess what I would think of is the opposite of that as well, which is if there's a brand I really love, even if I don't care about what's in this particular email, I will open and I will click. And I just think of it as it's like good marketer juju, I guess. Like, I want to continue hearing from you in the future. I want to make sure you're getting into my inbox and other inboxes. So I'm going to help you out. I'm going
to give you the equivalent to throwing a like on an Instagram post. Like you're just clicking on something.
Exactly. Yeah. I will frequently, like at least once a week, take some time to go through and do that with the emails from the brands that I love.
That is most definitely the marketer in you, Shane, because those are the things that you think about, right? When with not even just emails, but, you know, forms and websites and all the different kind of messaging that we see, we just have such a different perspective on because we're doing it on behalf of clients and our own company. So,
So I wanted to start there because I think a lot of times as marketers, we think about how do we get in the inbox? How do we get them to open it? How do we increase click rates? But we don't think about like our own experience with email, our own process with email. Experience is maybe one thing, but our process, like how do we go through our inbox every day? What are the things that matter? So, and I think this is relevant because if we're looking at the question of like, why is my email not performing and how do I fix it? You know, we need to understand, why is this happening in general? So maybe Shane or Jillian, you have some thoughts on why are we seeing click-through rates and then even delivery rates going down?
Yeah. So a few different reasons. The deliverability is a much bigger issue to me because one thing we've seen this year is deliverability rates going down across our clients. There are a few different reasons for this. The first is that in February of 2024, Google and Yahoo introduced new email sender policies. So basically they rolled out a bunch of new policies, or requirements for email senders. And the goal of these policies was to lower the amount of spam that was making it to inboxes. And the policies can be grouped into 3 buckets. The first was authentication. So senders now have to verify their identity using standard protocols like SPF, DKIM, and DMARC. We'll get into what those are. The second bucket is they wanted to make it easier for people to unsubscribe. So senders now have to offer a 1-click unsubscribe link in their emails. No more like, you have to click here to unsubscribe and then you hit a landing page where you have to put in your email again and you have to hit submit. That's not allowed anymore.
That's interesting because I still have that experience frequently.
I was thinking the same thing. Yeah, like some people have picked up on it and some are still going through the same old ways where you have to jump through all these hoops to actually get out of
their
emails.
Tell me why you're leaving. And
yeah.
Well, that's the thing. Those people are going to be, they're already being dinged by Google and Yahoo. So if you want your emails to hit inboxes of specifically Google and Yahoo users, these are the things to do. More and more other email service providers are going to require this type of thing as well. And then the third bucket is that they're requiring that senders keep their spam complaint rate below 0.3%. So if your spam rate goes higher than that, then you're in trouble. And they're basically going to start holding back emails from inboxes, and they already have, if you're not following these best practices. A lot of these things we were already doing with our clients. And honestly, I think they're actually really great for email users. We don't want spam in the inbox, and we want to actually be able to get the valuable emails that we are looking for that have good information for us. So I think this is creating a better experience for email users, but it had a big impact on email marketers. So we started working with our clients months in advance to get them ready for these changes. And we were actually able to make it through earlier this year without seeing big deliverability hits with Gmail and Yahoo specifically.
So here's like a practical question for you. You're a marketer, you're looking at your email stats in HubSpot, MailChimp, whatever tool you use. There's a lot of numbers to look at. When you say email deliverability, which number is that?
So it's the percentage of emails that you sent that actually make it to the intended recipient. And this gets into my next point, which is the bigger issue that we're seeing is with B2B clients. That's where we see big deliverability challenges, because more and more companies, especially really big companies, are taking cybersecurity very seriously, as they should be, but they're using more aggressive firewalls, more aggressive spam filters, and it's becoming harder and harder to get emails in from the outside, from anyone outside. So that includes marketing emails, but even as a one-to-one user, it can be tough to get an email into a big company these days. So when we are reviewing an email's performance, we'll look at how many people did we try to send it to and how many people did the email actually make it to. It can hard bounce, like that person doesn't exist at that email address anymore, or it can soft bounce. And what we're seeing a lot more of is soft bounces, where the firewall at the company that we were trying to reach did not let that email through. That person is there on the other side, and we can no longer get to them via email.
Yeah, it's worth noting, we are a HubSpot partner, so the majority of the reporting and the data that we're digging into for clients is primarily in HubSpot. So, Jillian, I'm curious then, like, maybe some of the things that you're seeing in HubSpot specifically that we can do to maybe help solve some of these things.
Yeah. So HubSpot, great CRM. It has a lot of features to help you understand your email deliverability. Part of that is because all HubSpot users are essentially sending from a shared sending type of domain, which HubSpot really has to maintain and keep healthy, so that, you know, one client using HubSpot doesn't affect everybody else using HubSpot and the emails that they send. That's the thing that they're really worried about. So they have their own kind of standards and benchmarks that they expect their users to meet before they kind of get into these penalized zones for email sending. And so those are in place, and that's kind of more around what Shane was talking about with like hard bounces, soft bounces, spam reports, and things of that nature. But it's also kind of important to think about the other side, which is the engagement aspect of the email. Your open rate is definitely something that can impact whether your email is delivered. It might be delivered, but is it delivered to their primary inbox, or is it going into their junk or spam inbox?
That's interesting to me too, because I have a whole junk, like there's like the junk tab. Google will, you know, sort your things into like the promotions tab or whatever. Basically, if an email goes there, I'm not looking at it. I'm just deleting it. But then I have a whole email addresses that are like the junk ones that I put in when I like want a free coupon for something. And I don't even check those inboxes. Like they just go unmonitored completely.
Emily, you are a marketer's worst nightmare.
I know. Well, I think it's part of it is because like I know some of the tricks. So I'm almost on the other side of the spectrum. You're like, I love them. I want to support them in their marketing. And I'm kind of like, they should do better. This sucks. Like they need to like they need to make better choices, as I would tell my 3-year-old. But they just I just have no tolerance, I think, for it. But like for me, in B2B case or in B2C cases, there are just, to your point, Jillian, sometimes like there is just, you're just not going to get through to them. Like they are just not a fit for you. this person sending them email is just not the best way to reach them. And so, you know, that's something you have to recognize. When are you at that point with your contacts and your database? Like I just should not reach out to them via email because it's hurting my sending authority or, you know, credibility as a email marketer.
Yeah. I mean, so these inbox providers, I mean, we've mentioned Gmail, Yahoo, providers of that nature. I mean, they will penalize you. So if you're essentially creating what they refer to as gray mail, which is maybe you're more of a Shane where you might not unsubscribe, you might not be too quick to unsubscribe, but you're not necessarily engaging with the emails. You're not opening them. You're not clicking anything in them. And over time, these providers look at that data and they say, okay, well, maybe this actually should be in the spam folder. And they start looking at those behaviors of others. And that's how they kind of dictate the placement. And certainly other people are doing exactly what you're doing, Emily. There's so many emails nowadays. It's important to know that there's several other channels where we can reach clients. Emails may work better for some companies and, might be the best or for others. It's important to vary your channel, in terms of getting your message out there to your base. But it's also important to constantly look at your send lists. There are some really basic things that it should sound obvious, but I don't know if it is to everyone. But I mean, if someone hasn't opened your email for a year, stop sending to them. It's not going to help you. I mean, the whole point of the email is for your information to get to the person that you're hoping it would, and that it resonates with them, and they then take the action that your email is guiding them towards. So we're only hurting ourselves by keeping people on our email list that don't want to receive our emails or aren't finding them helpful. So it's definitely important to maintain good data, review your email list often, and don't be afraid to, you know, move people into that do not send list or your suppression list. And I think another kind of obvious point is don't try and send to people that have had these big tick marks on their email. So like if they've hard bounced, soft bounce even, I mean, you can attempt a soft bounce again, but that kind of is at your own discretion, like how much, you know, risk you want to take sending to these people. But yeah, I mean, there are several things that you should be doing. Something that our clients do quite often, and it comes at our recommendation, is utilizing a third-party email verification service. There are a couple out there. Some of the ones that we use is Kickbox, Dbounce. Those are really great for testing out your send list. If it's a new list that maybe you got from somewhere else, ZoomInfo, something we hear a lot in marketing and as a resource that people use to get contact information. Mostly reliable, but definitely not foolproof. So sending those through an email verification service, which you can easily integrate with your CRM in most cases, and doing that on a regular basis as well. So someone hasn't been checked in a while, re-verify them. It will basically do like a soft ping to their inbox and test out that deliverability and whether it would make it or not. Comes to a conclusion whether or not they think it's safe for you to send or that there might be some risk involved if you decide to send to them.
I love to A/B test subject lines.
yeah.
Yeah, because you can just, HubSpot makes it very easy. You can send out one email with two different subject lines, and it'll test the first 50%, and then whichever subject line performs better in terms of open rate, then it will send that subject line to the next 50%. And we're testing things all the time, not just subject lines, but also copy in the email, copy on landing pages. But that's a good thing to do if your open rates have been suffering.
Yeah. I'll also add another thing that, you know, we always talk about, A/B test your subject line, A/B test your preview text, you know, the body of your email, but also A/B test your sender. Another thing, you know, we talked about HTML heavy emails and how those are, you know, a big warning sign to these firewalls. But if you're sending from a no reply, you know, email, or it's a, you know, a shared channel like marketing@trek.com, that is an immediate red flag to these security filters. And so try burying your sender. A lot of people will try sending it from like an actual person so that it doesn't come across, not even just to the back end, you know, technology, but also to the person reading the email. It doesn't come across as much as a marketing email. So that's another thing to certainly test as well.
On the subject of A/B testing, maybe even just specifically subject lines, a question I hear often is like, how different do those options need to be? Or like, should they be really similar? Just like one tiny thing is different so that you know that that thing was the reason that it performed better or whatever. How do you do that?
if we're being good scientists here, yes, only test one variable. So I wouldn't try to test more than one thing in one subject line. So I wouldn't say I'm looking at different copy and, you know, including an emoji or not including an emoji, because then you don't know, was it the copy or was it the emoji? Right. So yes, only change one thing. But that said, like A/B test, you know, every single email you send. So you can be testing those different things across different emails. Jillian, thank you so much for joining us to talk about email open rates, deliverability, and health.
Thank you so much for having me. Fun times were had.
So we've been talking about the question of email marketing. Now let's talk about how we've solved that problem for one of our clients.
Yeah, let me set the stage here with the problem. So marketing, the marketing team at this client was communicating everything that they were doing, all of the different collateral, all of the events, all of the lead generation efforts. They were communicating all of that with sales, but sales didn't really seem to know what was going on. They were still sending emails to our marketing contact constantly asking for new resources. And there was just a big misalignment between the two teams. And this isn't really unheard of. We hear this a lot with clients. And I think part of it is because of the amount of emails that people get. And we talked about this in our big question. But one stat we found says that the average professional gets 121 emails a day.
Yikes.
Which seems pretty high. Maybe for me, that's about normal, but I don't think that's a normal amount for you.
Oh, as I mentioned, people are scared to email me.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So anyways,
I still get a lot of marketing emails, but
the point is that it's easy to lose an email in your inbox, especially if you are used to seeing a lot of emails from that person. And so I think that was the case here. Big takeaway is that it was a lot of message. Marketing is talking into a black hole. Sales is just not hearing the message that marketing has of all the things that they're doing for them.
And this marketing team was putting out some really cool collateral. So it was extremely unfortunate that sales didn't know about it. And we had to fix that.
Yeah, they're a paper company. So they do a lot of really intricate paper marketing collateral that takes a long time to produce. It's highly creative. There's a lot of finishings and print technology to show off. It's a big deal. And to release that and then not have it go anywhere with your sales team, and then the message isn't getting out further, it's disappointing for sure.
So how did we solve that problem?
Well, so despite the fact that people get a lot of emails and they weren't reading these particular emails, we still knew that this was an email problem, that an email channel was still the best way to reach them, because it's cheap, you know, like we're not going to send a direct mail to our own sales team, not going to send messages to own sales team through Teams or whatever it would be, or intranet even. We knew it needed to be email. So we were joking about how do we get them to pay attention to all of these things that we've been telling them, and it's stuff they should already know. So I think we were at an event in person and joking around with our contact, our client, we were saying we should call it Sheet You Should Know, because they're a paper company. And then it kind of evolved from there, and it's stuck, that Sheet You Should Know message. And it evolved into this newsletter that was internal only, of course. So we played with the little bit more provocative wording, really graphic images, graphic meaning a lot of color, a lot of attitude. And it became,
it's still safe for work, to be clear.
But to
describe this email, the header has a guy with a bullhorn who's breaking through a piece of paper, shouting into the bullhorn and making just this wild face. And he's also got wild hair and like a mustache, like a fake mustache that's a little off kilter. The colors are like really bright and bold, like bright yellow and hot pink. It's just very in your face as a marketing email.
Yeah. Yeah. And it became sort of this like really interesting thing that the sales team wanted to get in their inbox. So we shifted it from another email from marketing that I don't want to read to this really interesting newsletter, but it also was really visual, showing exactly what the sample was, exactly what the update was. And it was really brief, really high level. This is the thing that you should care about. And I think that was part of why it was a good avenue for solving this message, because she was trying to communicate with sales and give them all of the benefits of these pieces. And it just turned out that maybe email wasn't the best channel to do that in. They just needed their one takeaway.
Mm-hmm. High level bullet points. The other key here, I think, is that this email is quarterly. So we're not emailing you every week with updates from marketing. You get one email per quarter and it has some really important information in it. They know to look forward to it every quarter. They get excited about it because it's fun. We also played around with the content a lot. Like it's a pretty cheeky email. So it's called Sheet You Should Know! Exclamation point. And then each sort of update in the email is called something like hot sheet or cool sheet or new sheet. And then you've just got one sentence telling you what the takeaway is and a call to action to check out that sheet.
Yeah, I think that's one of my favorite parts, is just the fact that it's, I mean, most of the stuff falls into that category. Like, what is the hottest thing? You know, like what's really new? But it's funny. And at the end of the day, it did work. Obviously, this segment's called Problem Solved. It wasn't just a solve-all fix for marketing and sales alignment. So I'll say that. I'm not going to say that it's perfected the communication between the two. However, the first newsletter we sent out, we had an influx of messages from people all over the company who have nothing to do with these samples, nothing to do with this division, asking to receive the newsletter because they'd heard about it. It was being forwarded. It was being shared. It just sort of went like internally viral, which is good for, you know, support for their brands, support for rallying everyone wanting to do more. paying more attention to the work that's being done there. That's fun. That's creative. And there's a lot of work that goes into it. So sort of helped surface that for our contact, but then it also kept the things true to the goal. All of the elements that we were doing, all the resources we were creating, top of mind for sales.
Mm-hmm. So to put some numbers to this, this email that goes out quarterly consistently has around a 50% open rate, which is amazing for email. And our last email that we sent had a 60% click-through rate. So people are really engaging with it. They're checking out the marketing samples. Like you said, they're forwarding it. People are requesting to be added to the list. Overall, it's one of the more successful communication campaigns that I've seen between a marketing and a sales team. And it's just really fun. Fun fact, Sidetracked is the name of the bar inside Trek, where it's not uncommon to find a copywriter and a designer brainstorming a new project, an account manager hosting a client for happy hour, and our creative director and head mixologist, Mike Wilson, mixing up something fun.
In this season of Sidetracked, Mike's making his way through a 1970s cocktail recipe book, and we volunteered to be his taste testers.
Mike's at the bar, and he's made us a drink.
What'd you make us, Mike?
I made you guys Latuna. It's made with tequila, lemon juice, and bitters, and you top it off with club soda.
Mmm.
We have salted the rim, just for taste.
Okay, so it's kind of like a margarita?
Kind of like a margarita.
But with club soda. Okay.
I don't think I would be off-put by the pink color if the name tuna wasn't in the title.
Okay. So I took a taste. It's not bad.
But
this trend of putting club soda in cocktail, I don't know if I love the club soda. Feels a little watered down. We are working through the 2-in-1 international recipe card collection for mixed drinks and hors d'oeuvres from 1977. And it feels real 70s to me.
Yeah, you know, like those like the Jell-Os from the 50s that have like mayo and like tuna and then like grapes.
Okay, that sounds amazing to me.
No, it does not. And this cocktail tastes like that to me. It tastes
there is like a little bit of vomit.
Yeah. I think it's the color.
Let me take another taste.
But okay, for the non-alcoholic version, I will say this does taste like... Is it whiskey? Like
a tequila.
Oh, a tequila. Yeah. Yep. Okay. Well, it does. There is like a more of a smoky kind of flavor, which I can appreciate being.
Yeah, this is not my favorite drink.
Would you substitute the club soda for something?
I would probably cut the club soda and I don't know. Then I'd try it.
Yeah. I think it's just not my style.
Yeah. Latuna as a name is also
a little off-putting. When we were trying to find this online, we couldn't find the drink anywhere when we Googled it. So I think they might have rebranded, which was a necessary thing, I think.
Or they just scrubbed it from existence because it's not a
Because
good
it's bad. Yeah.
Latuna has gone out of style. Okay. Well, thanks for making this for us.
My pleasure.
Hey, cheers.
Cheers.
That's a wrap on our first episode. Thanks for joining us. You can learn more about Trek at trek.com.
And if you liked this episode of Sidetracked, you can rate and review it, share it with a friend, and smash that subscribe button.
See you next time.
See ya.
Oh, and one more thing. I've been thinking about the Apple Intelligence update that will automatically sort emails from brands into a promotions tab. And the only way to change that is for the user of the phone or the Apple system to turn off all AI features on their phone. How crazy is that?
That is wild. All right. One more reason to make sure your emails are coming from a real person.
Exactly.